Good afternoon. The House Transportation Economic Development Committee will come to order. It's Monday, March 21st, and we have public hearings today on two bills. So I'll start by opening a public hearing on House Bill 3507, House Bill 2727. Zach, if you can give us a summary, I will hand the gavel to our co-chair and go around to the other side so I can introduce the bill when your summary is complete. Excuse me.
House Bill 2727 establishes a fund for energy, jobs, and innovation. Directs monies in the fund to be expended for clean energy technologies. This is all through the Oregon Inc. House Bill 3507 authorizes the Oregon Innovation Council, also known as Oregon Inc., to make grants and loans related to seed money to induce economic growth through clean energy sectors.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee members, Tobias Reed, State Representative from District 27, here to introduce to you primarily House Bill 3507. And I want to be clear that I'm talking particularly about the amendments, dash threes and dash fours, I think you may have in front of you. I don't think there's anybody among us who doesn't recognize that the creation of jobs is among the very most important things we can be working on, and that's especially true in this session. The bill that's before us today, again, 3507, supports what I think is among our very best job creation strategies. On the day I was sworn into the legislature, I started lobbying then-Speaker Merkley for an appointment to the Oregon Innovation Council. I'm glad I did, and I'm glad he agreed. I've been an ex officio member of the council and a big fan of their work ever since. The Innovation Council, which some of you may have been exposed to before, brings together state government, higher education, the private sector to focus on innovation and move breakthroughs from the lab to market. Does this with three signature research centers and a changing set of industry initiatives. They're all selected by a very robust process that reacts to proposals, rigorous review, robust vetting, quarterly audits, and a serious evaluation based on ROI. And I think it offers one of our best opportunities to create high-wage jobs for Oregonians. That's obviously a huge imperative for us in a state that relies on income tax to do all the other things we want to do. In the 4 years that the council has had funding, the results have really been excellent. The council has attracted $250 million in private federal grants, generated more than $7 for every dollar that the state has invested. And the first biennium, the council created or retained 665 jobs and on track to do very nearly the same number in this biennium. That's a cost per job to the state of around $30,000, and most of those jobs are in expanding industries with high wages. So this all is a nice story, and Oregon Inc. is a good thing, but there's a problem, and that's what motivates me to bring this bill. In the two sessions that we've been able to fund Oregon Inc., it has come near the end of our process, near the end of the budget cycle, after we've funded all the other important things. And certainly I don't intend to call into question the importance of schools, public safety, human services, or any of those things. But shouldn't innovation be a high priority too? Shouldn't our investments in the kinds of things that are going to create jobs, particularly high-wage jobs, be a priority? That lack of certainty has two problems for Oregon Inc. One, it's less attractive for the private sector to be involved if there isn't certainty that it will continue to exist. And second, it's a bigger problem for Oregon Inc. to hire the top talent from around the country because they're not sure that Oregon Inc. might continue to exist. So this bill does two things. Creates the Oregon Innovation Fund, for lack of a more descriptive term, the bucket into which funding can come from any source. General fund, lottery fund, private donations, anything else we might identify. The details of the Oregon Innovation Plan that the council creates for the next biennium, 2013-2015, are yet to be worked out. But I think it's clear that energy is likely to be somehow part of that plan. We send billions of dollars out of the state to purchase energy in various forms. And I don't think that I'll be able to add much to the committee's understanding of why it would be good to increase our own energy security and independence, to keep that money in Oregon, to have better control around the energy that we need. So we've identified a funding mechanism for the energy-related activities of Oregon Inc. something called the Energy Supplier Assessment, about which some of my the people who follow me may have more to say, that has generally funded the Department of Energy in recent years. It has a cap that's significantly higher than the current assessment, and in the eyes of a lot of people who pay it, it doesn't have sufficient limitations on how those dollars can be used. So the amendments would propose some limitations to how those dollars can be used, a lowering of the cap, and an increment in that energy supplier assessment that's paid by energy wholesalers that would go to fund the energy-related activities of Oregon Inc.
Do we have amendments?
I think I would be overly ambitious and hopeful to say that the people who will come after me will all agree with every bit of what I've said or be in enthusiastic support of this version, but I have appreciated the productive conversations we've had with a variety of stakeholders, and I'm optimistic that we're going to be able to get this or some version of this passed. So I'm looking forward to more discussion. I think everyone agrees that the goal we're after here is worthy, and look forward to any questions you might have before coming back up to the dais.
Thank you, Representative. Questions?
Not a one?
Very somber group.
Yes, seriously.
Do you have any, I have a couple, do you have any idea of how much money you're talking about that would be necessary from this source?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The current ESA, which is assessed at 0.069% of gross revenues, generates somewhere in the neighborhood of $5 million. My interest is in identifying some reliable funding for the energy-related activities of Oregon Inc. I am open to negotiation about exactly what that number is, but I think the point is to try and identify that it's a priority and that we can have some certainty about that going forward.
Some, I'm sure, that will follow you might suggest that it's a stretch to move the energy umbrella over the entire concept of Oregon Inc. Could you address that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think the interest for us around the opportunities of energy stems from the realization that we send billions of dollars out of the state, and that energy is a really important ingredient in all of our economic activity, all of our economy, all of our society. And what the motivation for Oregon Inc., and I'll let others say something about this too, is high-wage jobs. So what are the opportunities that Oregon Inc. can identify where Oregon has a competitive advantage, that we can create high-wage jobs? I don't presume to know exactly what that will be, and I think that's indeed one of the strengths of Oregon Inc., that it brings together people from the private sector, from higher education, and that very interesting process where proposals come forward and in the very best sense, harsh critics look them over carefully. I think the number of proposals that were made for the last for the current plan that's before the legislature was in the high 20s, and they selected I think 5 or 6. So it's a robust process that narrows in on where the real opportunities are. It's in the governor's budget this session for $18.95 million, and we're certainly hopeful that that will be approved by the legislature.
The term energy is, I suppose, as broad or as narrow as we might make it. So maybe you could address that.
Mr. Chair, I would be glad to. I realized once I came down here that I left my copy of the amendments up there. But there is a definition early in the amendments. I think it might be Section 1 or 2.
And, Zach, I don't see that we have the amendments. Do we?
No, but I did see the representative's aide just leave to go get them.
Oh, that's good. Great. Okay, thank you. Any further questions?
Thanks. Here it is, Section 1.
Thank you very much.
It's clean energy means a technology, product, process, or innovation that involves conservation of natural resources, solar energy, green building products and services, biofuels, biomass energy, bio-based products, or other renewable and sustainable energy.
Fairly broad.
Indeed.
Further questions? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Yep.
And we have folks signed up. What is that? Is that Josh?
Yes.
Josh Bratt, Tom O'Connor, and Jason Henson. If you three could come up. Thank you.
to get started?
You bet. I'm Josh Bratt. I live in Lake Oswego, Oregon. I'm a 20-year veteran of Morgan Stanley in Portland. I have eight generations of my family have lived in the state. My great-great-great-grandparents are buried down Commercial Street in the Pioneer Cemetery, to the extent that that's interesting or gives you a perspective on the duration of my interest in Oregon. For the last several years, a small group of private citizens, I'm here representing myself, not Morgan Stanley, I should clarify that, have been keenly interested in economic development issues in Oregon and energy specifically for obvious reasons. We're in a tough state of affairs, below many of the national benchmarks, and we also have a pretty keen interest in the, I guess, the national security aspects related to energy. We've looked at other states, and we're obviously I'm a business person, and this group is comprised of economists and politicians and a group of other folks. There are three real observations that have come from our work. One is there are several sort of consensus assumptions. The second observation is the profound success of Oregon Inc. And the third one is that there's really a pretty significant gap in a couple of the components that they could be executing on as part of their existing work. Under the consensus assumptions that we've arrived at, and you're free to disagree with these assumptions, obviously, but we think they're pretty universally true. Status quo of Oregon's economy is not acceptable to any of us, I think. And the only way out of that is an above-trend growth in high-wage jobs. However, that's achieved, and as Oregonians and taxpayers, I think that people are interested in investing in that growth of those jobs. Two, we're in a small state. We have limited resources, and we need to make the best use that we can of our resources. I think that part of the attraction of Oregon Inc. is they've done that. One of the observations we have and part of our interest in energy is that Oregon is uniquely positioned as kind of a natural laboratory, if you will, as a place where those investments can be made with some effectiveness. And we've spent what will turn out to be probably north of $1 billion towards that. You can have whatever your opinion is of the money that's been spent so far. That's what we've done. So there's a competitive advantage that we have. The third category is really related to an economic development assumption, and that is that people and quality of talent matters most. It's like investing in the infrastructure of engineering and applied research. These are any business person or if it could be the Bonneville Power Administration. They will tell you that high-quality people matter most in their organizations. The fourth observation that we made was that for any region of the country or the world to attract business, there has to be a climate that is positive toward the growth and competitiveness of the businesses that are going to be locating in that region. You're not going to attract people if you're not doing that. So those are the consensus assumptions, if you will. Regarding the Oregon Innovation Council, we looked at a lot of different models, different states, read a lot of different papers, studies, looking at economic development programs in the country. Few match the disciplines associated with the process and the prioritization that Oregon Inc. Has accomplished. Few have made such efficient use of the limited resources that they've had, and also few have the level of discipline associated with the measurement of the results that are inherent in the process that Oregon Inc. uses. So with all that success, there's really a major gap in our view that exists in the resources that Oregon can bring to bear. And Representative Reed alluded to this, and that is long-term funding. There are two really key components that matter in that regard, and the first is talent development, and the second is a demonstrated commitment to industry. It is our observation again that if you're trying to do as Howard Ballin did when he built up Tektronix and created a world-class company, you're not going to do that without world-class talent. The result of his efforts are the Silicon Forest and Intel and Hewlett-Packard and everyone else that's here today. Really, I mean that's the genesis of that. In terms of the attraction of partnership of industry, the example of the Manufacturing 21 Coalition, which a couple of years ago had put together resources and private industry, and with Portland State University, everyone was aligned. Industry was ready to come to the table and make investments. Portland State could not find the budget to make the long-term commitment to bring a talented professor to fill their end of the mix, and probably made the wise economic decision not to hire that person. So the long-term funding component, adding that to the toolkit, if you will, of Oregon Inc., is the to allow for that long-term collaboration with private industry and long-term collaboration with the Oregon University system to build up the talent and applied research resources that are available in the state. So that's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Josh. If you'd like to stick around, we'll hear from the other panelists and then see if there are questions.
Go ahead, Tom. Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Tom O'Connor, representing Oregon Municipal Electric Utilities Association. Oregon Municipal Electric Utilities Association represents 11 of the not-for-profit city-owned electric utilities in Oregon. We support targeted research in the electric distribution, transmission, generation, and energy efficiency arena. Currently, our electric utilities and our ratepayers, since we don't have investors, it's all ratepayer dollars, fund the three existing R&D programs. The first is the Bonneville Power Administration's Technology Innovation Program, which is a program that we pay through our rates to Bonneville that's dedicated to applications that deliver value, reduce costs, or increase revenues and maintain low rates, reliable power for the region. Some examples of those kinds of projects include the Pacific Northwest Smart Grid Demonstration Project at OSU, the Improved Wind Integration and Forecasting, and field evaluation of high-performance windows in manufactured housing. So real targeted to the electric industry and specifically to the Northwest. Secondly, we help fund along with all the other electric utilities in the four-state region, the Northwest Energy Efficiency Alliance, or NEA. NEA's mission is to create sustained change in Northwest markets by removing market barriers and increasing demand and availability of energy-efficient solutions. And since 1997, I looked it up, more than 300 average megawatts have been saved in markets where NEA and the utilities have worked together. That's the equivalent to powering more than 200,000 homes for an entire year. A third area that we're involved with is the American Public Power Association Demonstration of Energy Efficient Developments, or DEED. APPA is our National Association of Public Power Utilities. DEED is a small research and development program funded by and for public power utilities, promoting energy innovation, improve efficiencies, and lower costs of energy to public power customers. The emphasis there is on very small utilities, on projects and case studies that can be transferred to other small utilities through webinars and other ways of best practice sharing. So we support R&D through these existing programs, again, that are targeted directly at improving reliable, low-cost, energy-efficient service to our customers. However, we cannot support using or risking ratepayer dollars, and the ESA is made up of ratepayer dollars, to fund startup companies and growth enterprises along the lines of what seems to be envisioned in House Bill 3507. We believe Oregon Inc. does a lot of good things. However, we believe that those kinds of economic development activities and support of startup companies should be funded through, as it is now, through private venture capital and lottery dollars. And that concludes my testimony.
Thank you.
Commissioners Bence and Reed, good afternoon. Members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak. For the record, I'm Jason Huser, the Legislative Affairs Manager for the Eugene Water and Electric Board, Oregon's largest consumer-owned utility, serving 80,000 customers in the Eugene area. First off, I'd like to strongly concur with Mr. O'Connor's testimony. I wanted to just make some very brief remarks. There's a document you have in front of you that was passed out titled Energy Management Services Pilot Participation in Planning Projects. This is a list of all the pilot projects that EWEB is currently participating in right now. Several of these projects were funded with funds that were directed from NEA as well as the Bonneville Power Administration. And I wanted to share this with you because I think it's illustrative that the folks at NEA and Bonneville obviously have a very high familiarity with utility services and systems, and they do an excellent job of targeting projects that they know clearly are going to have a tangible benefit for the ratepayers that ultimately sent those dollars to their organizations. And I think that that's one area we've identified in the legislation that we're not quite comfortable with. We believe there still needs to be some work done to demonstrate clearly that there's an assurance that ratepayer dollars will be invested in ways that are guaranteed to bring a tangible benefit back to the ratepayer. And I want to reiterate that we strongly applaud the goals that Representative Reed is forwarding here. It's very important to support innovation and position Oregon for the future in these areas. I think that what's missing is that nexus and the assurance of the tangible benefit that's going to be returned to the ratepayer. And I can promise you we're committed to sitting down with Representative Reed and other proponents of the bill to see if there's any work that can be done to improve that. Thank you for considering our input.
Thank you very much. Other questions? Representative Lindsay.
So we have Business Oregon, we have Energy Trust of Oregon, have Inc. What other programs are there that are similar to this, and is this not duplicative of any of them? And any of you three can answer that.
We look very closely at that question and have for some time. The answer is that there, on the surface, there appears to be duplicity, but there really is not. You have the engineering and technology
industry council
that is direct funding to higher education. You have the Energy Trust of Oregon. You have the general work of the Oregon Business Development Department, but none of them have aligned themselves with the process that Oregon Inc. and Oregon Inc. has a number of partners in that process, including Representative Reed, the organization that Duncan Wise,
Oregon Business Council,
there's a consortium of a lot of other groups, and Ryan Deckert's a group as well. They are the only ones, to my knowledge, who have really dedicated themselves to adhering to the priorities that are designed to capitalize on the competitive advantages that Oregon has. The rest of so ETIC is catering to some of the specific needs of some of the engineering training needs of some of the larger employers, and the Energy Trust of Oregon is concentrating on energy conservation primarily. The part of the thesis behind this is that bringing together all of these things is going to make much more efficient use of the very limited resources that we have. So why shouldn't the work that Energy Trust of Oregon is doing, why shouldn't the work that ETIC is doing, why shouldn't those be wrapped in to all this work that's been done in identifying that lowest hanging fruit for us?
Other questions?
Mr. Chair, Representative Lindsay, if I may, I think I tried to illustrate a few of the efforts that, and you know, in our world that we're involved with, say the Bonneville Innovation Program, the Northwest Energy Efficiency Alliance, our national program. There's also the Electric Power Research Institute at the federal level, and then of course there's Business Oregon and the existing Oregon Inc. I guess what we're particularly concerned about, and the concern that we have with this particular piece of legislation and the way it's structured, is that we don't feel it's appropriate to take ratepayer dollars and treat that as venture capital to put it into business development, economic development, where the risk is in the marketplace that that firm may go out of business, the product may not work, and that's a good thing to have. We totally agree with that, but I don't think that that's an appropriate role for ratepayer dollars. That's once a product then moves into has been demonstrated and is cost effective and is appropriate for the ratepayers, that's the time that we step in, not in funding startup and companies and innovation. I think that's the difference. Thank you.
Senator Benz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you take us back, Tom, and tell us what the original purpose of the assessment was?
Mr. Chair, Co-Chair Benz, my recollection is the original purpose of the energy supplier assessment was largely to fund siting programs at the Oregon Department of Energy. Then over the years there were additional fees that were established to help with the siting program. Over time, the energy supplier assessments, which are a percentage of the gross revenues of energy suppliers in Oregon, those have moved into funding the activities of the Oregon Department of Energy. In effect, they are, I guess, for lack of a better term, a sort of a general fund for the Department of Energy and their activities.
Paul, I was just trying to understand how big the space is between how the money is currently being used and what this bill would suggest. Could you address that?
Mr. Chair, Co-Chair Benz, the existing energy supplier assessment is at the level that has been established by the director. Is it right around $5 to $6 million? And this bill, of course, has a blank in that category, so I couldn't speak to it. I mean, and I realize that Representative Reed is trying to, I think, talk about limiting the and capping that, you know, as part of this, so that it couldn't just go up and up and up. But this would be expanding the purpose of the energy supplier assessment to beyond the activities of the direct activities of the Department of Energy, which we support, to this new arena, and that's the concern that we would have.
Representative Lindsay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So it's grants and loans. Wouldn't it be better, wouldn't it eliminate some of the non-viable companies by just limiting it to a loan and striking grant?
Representative Lindsay, maybe, and that's a perfectly fine question and happy to have them answer, but I will let you know that we have some other people who have some more experience with Oregon Inc. directly that might also have some comments on that. So up to you if you want to ask this panel and later, but there may be another perspective later on.
Thanks.
Representative, briefly,
sort of move the microphone over just a little bit so catch
We We looked long and hard at those kinds of issues and trying to predetermine and guess what the right thing to do is. And at the end of the day, we took a leap of faith. We are taking a leap of faith with Oregon Inc. because they're the process that they use, and I'll let them speak to this more specifically, but they don't presuppose the whether a grant or a loan or a percentage or an industry or anything is the right or wrong place to do. They look at the data. They use their industry and academic experience with their with a group of people who are volunteering to help run this organization to make those decisions on a rolling basis. And so the my inclination is like yours. It'd be nice to sort of try to think all this through ahead of time, but the beauty, it's like democracy, the beauty of their process is that it is flowing and adaptable to the current circumstances. So that's I guess, the only comment that I would have there.
Thanks. Representative Nathanson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a question for EWEB, Eugene Water and Electric Board. In the testimony, you mentioned that you'd like to work on a way to ensure that investments were made in something that would yield benefit for the ratepayers, which is where the money came from. Could you give us an example? Out of the programs that are on the handout that you provided, it, either from this handout or something that that might occur to you, what's an example of something that might be funded where you would feel like the nexus between ratepayer investment and ratepayer benefit or payoff were very close, and some other kind of project where you would be more concerned and that's the sort of thing you would not like to see funded this way?
Representative Nathanson, co-chairs Benson Reed, and members of the committee, I think I'll answer it like this. In this handout, many of these projects were funded by NEA. And what's important about NEA is their board has representatives from utilities. EWEB itself, first off, by the way, we're a contributor, a direct funder of NEA to the tune of $250,000 a year, which is a substantial sum. And we have a board member who is able to sit and make recommendations to NEA on where these funds are directed and discern clear benefits to improving EWEB's system and the services that we provide ratepayers. And I think what we're concerned about is, you know, as written for now, this legislation doesn't necessarily, you know, demonstrate how utilities are going to be able to have their input and their expertise in identifying projects that would, as in the case of NEA, you know, clearly have a direct and tangible benefit to our ratepayers and our utility system.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Other questions?
Oh, yeah, actually, Mr. Chair.
Representative Smith.
Jason, the and maybe this is premature because you're only now sort of coming to grips with it, but in your comment of needing a nexus to ratepayer benefit, any you know, cocktail napkin knee jerk first blush thoughts of what such a nexus might look like or how to amplify such a nexus?
I honestly probably don't have an answer ready at the ready. I mean, I think the obvious answer is just in some way potentially getting a utility stakeholder input process, you know, having utilities at the table, being able to tell folks these are the best ways to invest any ratepayer dollars that will have a tangible benefit to utility services. You know, our mission is to provide safe, affordable, and reliable power, and utilities would have to be at the table to really ensure, again, that tangible benefit. I don't have anything specific in mind yet, but okay. As I said, clearly we'd like to talk to Representative Reed and other proponents about possible ideas.
Happy to do that. Thank you. If there aren't any other questions, we'll move on to the next panel. Thank you very much. Danelle Romaine, Ted Case, Jeff Bissonnette.
Thank you, Co-Chairs Benson Reed. For the record, my name is Danelle Romaine. I'm here today representing the Oregon People's Utility District Association. OPUDA is made up of five electric utilities in the state, and we wanted to thank Representative Reed, first of all, for working with us on this legislation. We're not there yet either, but we like some of the ideas. We've been working on the concept of how the use of the energy supplier assessment has expanded over the years. As Tom O'Connor testified to, it started off as being a fund for energy siting. Over the years, it's morphed into sort of backfilling the Department of Energy. And there is a statutory cap on the assessment that, as everyone is well aware of, is much larger than the current assessment, and that makes us very nervous. We are interested in legislation that would reduce that statutory cap to give us some assurances about future cost, but our biggest concern about the amendments to this bill as written are sending that money outside of the department. We like the idea. We like Oregon Inc. We like the idea of an advisory committee within the Department of Energy thinking about whether or not to fund some of these projects and having utility, ratepayer, and customer input over whether the project has, as we've talked about, a sufficient nexus to our customers. But as written, we don't like the idea of setting a precedent of sending that ESA money out of the department, just for sort of what that would say for future groups looking at that money. And we don't want to set that precedent, as I've said, of that money going out of the Department of Energy. So those are my comments, and we look forward to continue working with Representative Reed on this bill.
Thanks.
Case. Co-Chair Reed, Co-Chair Benz, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Ted Case. I'm Executive Director of the Oregon Rural Electric Cooperative Association. OREC represents 18 electric cooperatives in Oregon with 200,000 members, served with 30,000 miles of line, and Oregon State University recently concluded that directly and indirectly we contribute 3,000 jobs to the Oregon economy. Appreciate the opportunity to comment today on HB 3507. OREC shares Representative Reed's interest in clean energy innovation, and we've done a lot of work on this independently. I just want to mention a couple of projects that we're involved with. Some of Oregon's co-ops through the Pacific Northwest Generating Cooperative are involved in wave energy technology. We have another co-op, Surprise Valley, that's involved in a very exciting geothermal project. So we're doing some of this work, and we're also involved in research and development through both the Bonneville Power Administration, and I won't repeat Tom O'Connor's testimony on that. But we're also involved through the Cooperative Research Network, which is affiliated with our National Trade Association, NRECA. And let me talk a little bit about CRN, because it really gets at the notion of funding for R&D and innovation, which is part of this bill. CRN is funded on a per-meter charge for every electric co-op consumer in the country. And they're involved in a range of R&D programs. And so through the dues that electric cooperatives pay to CRN, each customer of electric cooperatives, whether it's Harney Electric Cooperative or Oregon Trail Electric Cooperative, pays for research and development programs. And while more research and innovation can always be done, ORECA has concerns about expanding the energy supplier assessment to include Oregon Inc. A significant increase in the ESA would be a hard hit for many of my members, many of who are experiencing 15 to 20% unemployment and little or no growth or negative growth, and an upcoming Bonneville Power Administration rate increase. We certainly appreciate the provisions in the bill to cap the potential increase of the ESA, and we commend Representative Reed for his work on that. However, we still feel that this bill needs additional work with respect to the governance and the type of projects that are funded. So I associate myself with some of the earlier testimony on that. Oregon Inc. is clearly doing some interesting work, and thanks to Representative Reed, we've learned a lot more about them recently. But we're still seeking more of a direct nexus with their initiatives and the work that we're doing. But we feel that this bill begins the conversation, and we want to be part of that conversation with Co-Chair Reed and the rest of the committee. That concludes my testimony.
Thanks very much. Mr. Bissonnette.
Thank you, Co-Chair Reed, members of the committee. My name is Jeff Bissonnette, representing the Citizens Utility Board of Oregon. We represent residential ratepayers of regulated utilities, primarily electricity, natural gas, and telecommunications. I'm here today in support of House Bill 3507, and to communicate why, let me tell you a little bit about the sort of track we've gone on in monitoring this issue. To be honest, when we first kind of started to hear about these ideas, we frankly were a little bit afraid that we would see a charge on investor-owned utility customers only. And that is something we would have had to oppose. We think that what we're talking about is general research and development that benefits the whole state, and we have to figure out a way for the whole state to pay for it. And so if 3507 would be putting a charge just on the customers of IOUs, we would oppose it. We saw an early draft of, I think, another bill that put sort of a general charge on electricity customers overall. And that, we had to furrow our brow a little bit, but because it is within the power of the legislature to basically put a fee or some sort of charge on anything and direct it to state purposes, we, while we sort of questioned whether or not, whether a ratepayer, whether it's all ratepayers or whatever was the right place to do it, we thought it was within the power of the legislature to do that, but would have to remain neutral on that. However, looking at something like the energy supplier assessment, it is expanding that funding base even more. And that is a very positive direction, I think, in this discussion, and one that we really do appreciate Representative Reed taking this discussion. And so based on that and based on the direction that we are looking at a broader funding base, as statewide a funding base, and yes, ratepayers are kind of secondary payers to the extent that the fees that their utilities pay as part of the energy supplier assessment does end up in rates. There's no denying that, but we're also looking at overall wholesale energy energy suppliers. And that is a pretty broad category, and broad enough that that we're pretty comfortable with that. A quick word on ratepayers and R&D. We get a little bit concerned when our utilities, private investor-owned utilities, and that's the customers for whom we represent, start to do a lot of R&D. Ratepayers are not great sources of R&D, as has been pointed out. There's a lot of dry holes for as many productive wells that you find. And do utilities belong in the business of pure R&D, as is being envisioned here and that Oregon Inc. is involved in? No. But if, again, we can find a broad-based, statewide mechanism for paying for this work, that's something that, again, we can support. In our view, Oregon Inc. Funds the outer edge of the next generation and maybe the next generation. We are looking at not just what is cost-effective today, because we know how to do that already, what might be cost-effective tomorrow, because we do have some playing around with that. Wave energy, definitely not cost-effective, but has a lot of potential. We have some investment in doing that. But there are a lot of things that we're looking at that we're not quite sure the science or the technology behind it, and that I think is where Oregon Inc. really focuses. And having the energy supplier assessment expands their work specifically on energy. There was some discussion about whether this duplicates current activities. The Energy Trust of Oregon, the Northwest Energy Efficiency Alliance were two things that were mentioned. And my answer to that question is no, this is not duplicative. We do not have either the ETO or NEO really involved in research and development. They certainly track it. They certainly test different things, but they are really trying to figure out how, you know, existing and, you know, kind of near next generation technologies are affecting the market and how they transform the market. For ETO, we are, you know, they pretty much purely deliver services on behalf of ratepayers of PGE, PacifiCorp, Northwest Natural and Cascade Natural Gas. They are also a supporter and a funder of NEA. And again, there's very different activities, but pure R&D, and again, outer next generation and next generation is not part of their mission. I'll conclude by saying that, you know, we probably look long and hard to find a perfect funding mechanism, and I'm not sure there's one out there. In our view, the energy supplier assessment is a good place to start the conversation, and this is a conversation that we're happy to be a part of, happy to support this bill, and that concludes my testimony. I'm happy to answer questions.
Thank you very much. Are there questions? Representative Benz?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just curious, Ted, do you know how much per ratepayer this amounts to? I'm trying to get a feel for the impact it's having on everybody across the state.
Co-Chair Benz, Co-Chair Reed, Co-Chair Benz, I can provide that for the record. I think it's somewhat less than a dollar per consumer of electric cooperatives that's assessed. So it's part of the dues that electric cooperatives have to pay to the National Trade Association. But it is based on the number of meters they have.
And that's over what time period?
Per year.
A dollar per year.
Thank you.
I have a question for Donnell. I heard your testimony particularly about the concern about something going outside of the Department of Energy. There are obviously some other bills elsewhere in this process that would make the Department of Energy look very different if it continues to exist. So what are your thoughts about that, given the relative uncertainty of what might happen with those discussions?
Representative Reed, I think it would be premature for me to comment on what would happen, assuming some of the functions of the Department of Energy are given to other agencies or become part of the governor's office, some of the bills that we've talked about this session. I haven't discussed with our client where they would want to see the ESA go under any of those scenarios. We are concerned about how, if the ESA were to be broken up between different administrative agencies, what that would mean in terms of future costs. So our biggest the reason we're at the table is pretty transparent. We're interested in controlling future costs. So any future discussions about the Department of Energy and where the ESA would go, that would continue to be our primary concern.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Lindsay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the bill says that the Oregon Innovation Council is the entity that will determine eligibility of proposals. So it's the council itself. I'm assuming, and we're talking about a nexus or changing that nexus, I'm assuming that that is not the nexus that you would like, that you'd like to maybe participate in somehow, or is changing that, would that be something that you'd be interested in changing this nexus you've discussed?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lindsay, yeah, I think as previous witnesses have said, that I think to make this work for us, we'd have to establish some priorities early on and set some framework that we would part of the research and development innovation at the outset and have some sort of consensus on the type of projects. For instance, I've asked my members, you know, what kind of projects would you be interested in? You know, we have, most of our power comes from the Bonneville Power Administration. Efficiency for hydroelectric power is very important to us. So I think those kind of projects will be of interest to us. So I think when we talk about Nexus is that, yeah, we definitely want to be part of the front end of that kind of discussion. Not to say that can't be done, but I don't think currently under the draft that it is.
Thank you. Any questions? Thank you very much. Our last two folks, Rick Warren and Len Bergstein. And maybe we'll have Len go first so that Rick can kind of Rick's a member of the Oregon Innovation Council, and if I know what he's been doing, he's been collecting the questions around Oregon Inc., and we'll see if there's any more that come up during Mr. Bergstein's testimony, and then we can hear from Rick.
Thank you, Chair Reed and Chair Benz. I'm here to testify on 2727. Is that okay?
We have them both open.
Both at the same time? Okay. Thanks very much. And I have some comments, which I'll have distributed. Co-Chair Benz and Reed, my name is Len Bergstein, and I'm pleased to appear today in support of House Bill 2727, representing Ocean Power Technologies. OPT is helping Oregon win the race to be a world leader in the responsible development, commercial development of wave energy. With contracts signed with Oregon companies to complete the buoy build-out, assembly, transport, and deployment, Oregon workers are hard at work completing the Reedsport single buoy and place it at 2.5 nautical miles off the southern Oregon coast near the communities of Reedsport and Gardner. This will be the first buoy of a multiple buoy array that will be North America's first commercial wave energy array. We're proud to be a partner of Oregon Inc. We're proud to really be the, I think, hopefully the demonstration of the public policy that that your legislative committees have set in motion. It's because House Bill 2727's intent to drive Oregon into a leadership position in the development of innovative clean energy technology that brings OPT here today to support this bill. There are many reasons to embrace this smart bill. House Bill 2727 will help develop energy independence for Oregon, our communities, and our country. It will encourage energy sources that don't pollute our air or our water. It will set in motion market forces that over the long term will keep energy bills in check. It will make a strategic linkage between Oregon research capabilities and Oregon's new engines of economic growth. And it sends a smart signal that Oregon wants to produce jobs in the clean energy sector without trying to pick winners or losers. We support the use of the broad-based expanded ESA charge to fund this smart strategy for these and other reasons. All ratepayers will benefit from the development of additional clean energy businesses in Oregon that lowers the reliance on fossil fuels. By encouraging innovative, dispersed businesses, this bill will provide the geographic balance of locating clean energy businesses on our coast, for example, so Oregon will make the best use of its existing grid infrastructure. Lastly, House Bill 2727 has a broad-based enhanced ESA charge that ensures fairness among Oregon ratepayers, whether they are customers of investor-owned or publicly-owned utilities. In this regard, we agree with the very smart testimony of Mr. Bissonnette. Our one request is that House Bill 2727 explicitly include wave energy as a qualified technology by inserting the words wave energy on page 2, that's in section 3, line 28, and page 7, section 9, line 31, after solar energy. Although we're comfortable with our place that we have among Oregon Inc.'s children, we respectfully suggest this addition will clarify your intent to continue to encourage Oregon's pursuit of global leadership in the responsible development of wave energy. Thanks very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Mr. Warren.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Rick Warren. I'm a recently retired IBM executive and have been with the Oregon Innovation Council from its inception. I am a member of the executive committee and have co-chaired the signature research committee and currently co-chair the new and existing industries committee, which Wave Energy is a member of that committee. As a member of the Innovation Council, the executive committee met and debated and discussed this particular bill, and we are going to recommend to the full council that we to support this bill. It creates a funding mechanism as described in the four amendments to the bill, and this House Bill 3507 would allow Oregon Innovation Council to accept a variety of funding sources to carry on its mission, including the lottery today, but in other sources as well. The Oregon Innovation Executive Committee supports and enthusiastically congratulates Representative Reed on his dedicated efforts to provide the more stable and reliable funding to Oregon Innovation Council's mission to grow high-wage jobs in Oregon's innovation-based economy. The Innovation Council Executive Committee will further recommend to the full Innovation Council to support Representative Reed's efforts working with appropriate stakeholders such that by 2013 we'll establish the Energy Supplier Assessment as a potential funding source that would enhance Oregon Innovation Council's efforts to grow Oregon's energy-related innovation strategies. So you can see that the Innovation Council Executive Committee is fully endorsing Representative Reed's efforts, as well as we'll put the 40 members of that committee, plus the various volunteers in advisory capacities as well, to help make this stuff come together. To answer a couple of questions, I think, that were phrased, one is, when you look at the Innovation Council, the signature research committees are the elements that deal directly with the universities trying to improve the depth and quality of our research in very specific energy or very specific economic clusters that the Business Oregon organization goes through a fairly long, rigorous process to make sure we have tight alignment. So that keeps a tight boundaries on where we're asking the universities to work collaboratively to grow their talent, improve their professors, etc. When you look at the key industries committees, as it's called today, this is a committee of new and existing industries. So the seafood industry, the food processing industry, have all been very active members of the benefit of the Innovation Council's steering, guidance, metrics, et cetera, and have been, you know, since day one. So the mission of the Innovation Council is broad enough to cover new, existing, as well as that necessary fundamental research to improve our universities, such that industry will look to those universities to put dollars in those universities for deeper research. So I think that was Representative Lindsay's question as well. When you look at the process by which the Innovation Council goes through, we start with the economic cluster. So we go through Joe Courtwright's activities, figure out where is the alignment of our skills within the state, as well as where the growth in the state is projected to be, and we start to put a tight alignment around that. We're doing that today, and one of the areas that we're recommending funding for in this biennium is something called Drive Oregon. And this is a cluster of 40 companies around electric vehicles. And they're all part of, some are doing research, but most of them are in the supply chain of electric vehicles across the state. That process then goes in with an RFP. And the RFP, the request for proposal, then goes through a fairly rigorous process each biennium, where we decide, you know, which are the correct proposals, which ones have enough merit to continue forward. We mentor the ones that don't get chosen to see if they can be brought up to further standard in subsequent years, but we then select the ones that we want to progress. Those then become where the funded initiatives have to become either a 501c3 or a 501c6, such that they're an independent entity that has the necessary tracking and funding mechanisms to make happen. So it's that rigor allows the progress that we've seen, you know, since 2005.
Thank you very much. Other questions? Representative Sheehan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So $250 million in federal and private grants have come in the last 4 years. As I was reading through some of the things on the website, I didn't see any private grants as success stories. If you take that $250 million and turn it into a percentage as far as federal versus private grants, what would we look like?
Without going and doing some research, I'd be probably inaccurate just making a guess. It's going to be a small percentage today.
Of private
versus federal. I mean, the federal grants are clearly the bigger numbers to hit, but the industry participation is starting to come together. We have spun off a number of companies But in order to do that, when you look at, as an example, Hewlett-Packard basically gave the buildings that were in, much of the equipment that's being used in the shared labs around the universities. So that when you add all that up, it's a sizable number. But I think it's relatively small by the other standards. But I could get the specific number.
Oh, please. So it seems like, as I'm reading this, it seems like the big success metric here is getting a grant, getting a federal grant or getting a private grant. How does a company's own profit margin and their own sustainability in terms of covering their own operating expenses by selling product or whatever, how does that play into this program? Or is this strictly a springboard to get a bigger grant?
So when you look at under signature research, which is Onami, Otradi, and Best, those are the signature research. There's a model that we put together that have various phases, and depending on where they are in the phase cycle, in that initial stage, that's the stage where they're interested in getting grants to get enough working capital to be able to make something come together. The gap funding that is provided is funded into various industries, universities, different people to be able to continue to get it, advance the cause. When they get into phase two and three, it's more about production and getting into various revenue and profit scenarios. So an example is the NAB stuff, and with Onami, the nanotechnology group. I mean, this is a production-based fuel system that is being used in the drone planes that was built as a derivative from the inkjet technologies. When you look at the blood company that got a $50 million grant to build its products, right? Now that's a grant, but it's a grant with the idea around several industries to make whole. When you switch gears to new and existing industries, these are industries at a deeper level of maturity. And what they're doing, so if you take wave energy as an example, we know in this state we can't compete with the R&D dollars that are being invested around the world by governments in designing and building buoys. But given the fact that our waves are second to none in the world, we want to create a very attractive area to do the assembly and test of these buoys, and then with the idea that we will go into production as the technology gets mature enough, but we're doing it on other people's nickel. And what we want to do is we want to have multiple companies come into this state, which we have so far, but get more as well, and use this state as that test capability, test environment. They're spending their money. It's real dollars. It's not coming from the federal government. It's actually money coming from other countries. There's people that are coming here to work at the University of Oregon State to work on the fundamental research itself.
Quick follow-up. So it's my understanding that wave energy especially seems to have a lot of subsidies and a lot of grants, a lot of this involvement. Are there any companies that you're working with either in wave energy or anything else that have reached that phase two or three at this point, or are they all there?
In the signature research areas, you have small companies that are at that level. What we're looking for is bigger companies as they grow. The blood company is probably the one that's holds a great deal of promise, but we're nurturing 18 or 19 companies that have already formed with the nanotechnology area. The sustainable environment with Best, you've got that activity has brought the 14 or so solar cell companies to bring the right technologies here. So those are companies that are here, located here, working under the Best umbrella.
Well, Coach, if I can, Co-Chair Reed, Representative Sheehan. In the case of Ocean Power Technologies, we are a U.S. company, went into the markets to get capitalized, and we wind up putting in about one-third into the project. One-third of our equity, one-third comes from either state monies or Betsy credits, and one-third comes from federal grants or loans or whatever programs we can cobble together. So, in fact, we do share your notion that there ought to be a participation by a company at our stage. We're in the commercialization of this way of power, so we think we want to put some skin in the game, and we also are looking for some help from, again, from a partnership with state and federal partners. So, and we would like to continue that as we move forward beyond the one buoy that we'll put in the water, and then as we move towards a multiple buoy array off Reedsport.
So are there any emerging energy businesses, wave technology or solar, wind, anything right now that are not reliant on some sort of government subsidy or grant or kickback or something as part of their model of just doing business?
Are you also asking about petroleum and gasoline and all the other things as well?
Sure, I'll ask about any of that. Is there anybody that just stands on their own legs? I mean, I'm just trying to wrap my head around this. Are there any that are currently just said, hey, I've got a great idea, I'm going to get some funding, I'm going to go build it and make money?
I mean, without doing some research, I don't know as I can answer that question accurately. But, you know, there are, I'm quite confident you can find companies that are trying to stand on their own, but they're going to be small in nature. In the emerging technologies, you know, there's a huge investment in being able to get the private-public partnerships in place, you know, to be able to in this case, you know, with wave energy, just to get a buoy in the water, producing electricity, be put back on the grid. And if industry were to do that all by itself, it probably wouldn't do it. But by having a partnership, you're getting the industries to come in and spend money to do that, to work the technology, to bring it down the curve, to get it to practicality.
Co-Chair Reed, Co-Chair Benz, Representative, I think we also, we at Ocean Power Technologies, we realize because we're a global company, we look at a lot of structures around the world where there is more than just a public-private partnership. There is actual active government investment in the project itself, or in setting up a wave hub, or in setting up the infrastructure, so that in fact other companies can come in and plug and play. And so, the investment that a wave company has to make in some other countries may be significantly less. I think Oregon's been particularly smart in the way they've gone forward. They've set out, first of all, a policy framework for wave energy, made sure that there's a really kind of an adequate way to look at the territorial sea, and then there have been modest programs, and they've asked companies, wave companies, to come in and go directly to Oregon Inc. or to other places to try and make this work.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Lindsay, did you have your hand up a bit earlier?
I did, Mr. Chair. I do have a... A lot of this was answered, though, but let me see if I can boil down to two questions here. First is Mr. Bergstein, and that is, has OPT been fully funded by private equity, the third portion, I guess? And if not, why not? And then the second question would go to the other gentleman, and that is, You mentioned the ETIC and all these other programs that try to work together, and working at my firm and working in emerging businesses, etc. One of the hardest things for clients, for these entrepreneurs, is the many options that are out there, and it's just too darn confusing for them. It's incredibly difficult just to wrap their brain around it. What can we do to better align these entities, to eliminate duplicity, but more importantly, to help it more to become more easy for these entrepreneurs to make it across the finish line?
Mr. Co-Chair and Representative Lindsay, great question. OPT is fully funded for its first buoy, and we have adequate equity for our share of the next buoy, the next stack of financing, which we think will be around $7 million. We do really, we've had excellent cooperation also with PNGC Power, who have taken an early position to both step up and invest and also be a strong partner in encouraging wave energy generally and specifically OPT. So we feel that we've got our stake, and then we're looking to kind of match that with others that will be at both the state and federal level.
And a follow-up, Mr. Chair, to that before you answer that, and that is, at some point there will be a liquidation event, and those investors, I'm assuming, are out of state. They'll have their liquidation event. What will happen to Oregon's investment when that liquidation event occurs?
Well, Mr. Co-Chair and Representative Lindsay, first of all, it's the markets, so it could be. I don't know exactly where all the investors are. Very well could be some Oregon investors could also be involved in our market. And I'm just assuming that what we will be doing is we will be here for the long run. I mean, we've got FERC licenses to be able to put a second round into off of Reedsport. We hope that will expand to again our full 10 buoys. We'll be looking to. We have FERC licenses that will hopefully expand that further in the Reedsport Gardner area. We also have a FERC license that looks at the Coos Bay area. Now, there are a lot of people who are thinking about whether or not we're going to expand quite as well as we think we're going to expand, and there are a lot of competitive uses of the territorial sea. But we're fully expecting to be in Oregon for the long run, and whatever happens with a liquidation event that you're talking about, we're fully expecting that we'll be investing in Oregon wave energy for the long haul. And I'd be happy to come in and talk with you and have Bob Lurie, our VP of Finance, come in and talk with you specifically about it. If you like it offline, and talk to you more specifically about our finances.
Hopefully the waves, the character and quality of our waves isn't likely to change anytime soon.
Mr. Co-Chair, Representative yes. Lindsay, very good question. The when you look at someone with an industry background like yourself or myself, you know, you want to hold people accountable, get things done. When you look at the work that has occurred these last couple of bienniums, many of these issues about the confusion of the different agencies, the confusion of how do you get something done, has surfaced. And it's still we still got a long ways to go. But when you look at the Business Oregon, you know, that as the focal point for economic development, what they're trying to do right now is to improve the website so that many of the learnings that have occurred, you know, they can eliminate some of the confusion. What we're running into right now, OET being part of the example, is we're starting to see some interagency confusion. And so, I mean, these are going to be some things that we're going to have to work through and be able to then add that to the website as well. But, you know, by having a one point, you know, of contact that we should be all recommending industries that are looking to be cited here to go to, we can start to track all the various bits and pieces and clarify it along the way. A lot of progress has been done, but much more to be done still.
Representative Benz.
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. And while you're both there, I haven't really heard anybody directly say why the energy resource suppliers, that is the electric utilities, natural gas utilities, petroleum suppliers, so forth and so on, why those folks should bear this cost. Maybe you could address that issue. What is it exactly about that particular group that prompts us to want them to pay for this activity as opposed to some other group? Or is it a broad enough group that you think that captures enough that they should have to pay it as opposed to some other group?
So, Co-Chair Benz, as I tried to mention a little bit briefly in my comments, I think that this is a broad-based, balanced way to fund the effort that you're trying to do here, the public policy that you're trying to achieve. All of us have a stake, all ratepayers have a stake in lowering our dependence on fossil fuels. All ratepayers have, an interest in having a dispersed, geographically balanced industry, in part to share and offset some of the costs for additional infrastructure investments. All of us have, I think, a stake in making sure that there are jobs throughout the state. So I believe that by incorporating the ESA mechanism, you're really kind of tapping into the broadest spectrum of to broaden the base of Oregonians who are supporting this effort, which I think does feed back in with a number of positives that the state should encourage. If there was adequate general fund monies, we probably would come in and suggest to you that the general fund should be the place for that. If there was an appetite for expanding the Betsy credit, maybe there would be somebody in our industry who would say, let's expand the Betsy credits. But neither one of those two approaches seem to make sense in the current environment. So we're trying to get I think a demonstrated set of public goods, which I've just tried to repeat, and broaden the base so that all Oregonians are contributing to those benefits. I hope that addresses your question.
And a follow-up.
Go ahead, please.
I guess just to take it a step further, how much should this broad base pay? We heard that the rough guess now is about $1 per ratepayer. Do you have some idea in mind of how much everybody should contribute to this particular effort?
Co-Chair Benz and Co-Chair Reed, I think that's way above my pay grade. I think that's a policy decision that we're hoping that you'll make. What we would like to see is have you take a look at the pool of money that you're going to get. If you wanted to get to a $16 to $20 million pool, I think that you could do the division and make sure that it worked. I think you have to get a pool of money that's adequate to the job that you want to get done as policymakers to be able to be, encourage this innovation approach that 2727 is trying to do, and to kind of have some pots of money that are attractive for the research component that's talked about, to really help commercialize them. Quite frankly, we're a company that thrives on research, but we're really trying to commercialize these. So you, I think, as a policy makers, should want to make sure that you've raised enough money in the $16 to $20 million range, at least, I would think, and do the division to kind of get that broadly based across the across Oregon ratepayers.
Thank you.
Representative Smith.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Thanks, Rick, for your testimony, and want to give you a chance to amplify sort of brag points on the Oregon Inc. stuff if you want. So heard the research dollars. Can you say a little about job creation, how many jobs we've created from it, cost per job, the kinds of jobs there are? I think there's some good stuff to talk about there, too, that might be helpful to have in our minds.
Well, from a jobs perspective, Co-Chair Mr. Reed testified that there was 665 high-wage jobs. The definition of high wage is greater than the mean average that continue to be tracked. There's going to be, with a little bit of success, an equal number this biennium. So we're going to get up, well over 1,200, on a journey to get to a much larger number. When you look at that from the investment that the state has made so far, it's in the range of about $30,000 per job. So, and that's not looking at all of the family wage jobs that come along with those jobs. That's been the model that has been driving us, day after day, to try to make that come together.
Could you read, and Representative Smith, every day for a year, 35 people got up and went to work at the Oregon Iron Works and built first buoy. As we move towards the deployment in one of the finest districts in the state, I might add. So they worked hard, and they were good workers, and they got the job done. For the next couple of months, people from Coos Bay who work at Sauce Brothers will be helping to move the buoy down to Coos Bay, out the Columbia, down the Pacific, down to Reedsport, and folks from American Bridge who will be working down there in the Reedsport Gardner area. They'll be working to help the moorings and anchorings and apply that. So we'll be doing one more contract with a firm that we hopefully will be on the coast that will be doing the assembly of all of those pieces together before we actually deploy the buoy. So we're trying to keep faith with you, and I think last session when you made a major commitment to Wave Energy, we promised you that we would move the jobs. We'd concentrate them in Oregon Iron Works to build the buoy, and then we would move them down the coast so that the coastal communities would share in the benefit of this this economic development. And that's what we're doing right now. So I thank you for the question. We believe that wave energy, amongst all of the other things that are being funded by Oregon Inc., will in fact not only create jobs, convert the money straight into jobs. 75% of our money goes right into the workforce. We will also be sending those jobs into communities that need this. Now, every square state, your district employees need need jobs, but the South Coast communities particularly are in need of these kinds of jobs, and that's why we have Mayor Timchuk as one of the best cheerleaders of our program, because he knows that jobs are going to be in the Reedsport community. So the question you ask has profound implications. Not only are there going to be jobs, but they're going to be put where they're going to be dispersed in the counties where, in fact, this can make a very, very significant benefit.
Thanks. If I could
please
respond to Representative Bence and Smith's comments, I'm going to tie two things together. When you look at this bill and the way co-chair Mr. Reed has defined it, it defines subaccounts underneath which the treasurer manages. Those subaccounts can be very specific on where those investments are, but when you look at this portfolio concept, it encourages other investors. And so it encourages the state, you know, through you guys, the state's investment through lottery dollars to be there so that industry looks at the state's commitment. It encourages private donors from a standpoint of there are many private donors. You know, you could look at the low-key investment that was done with down at the University of Oregon. You know, that we want to be able to take that money and be able to apply it to innovation as we gain the credibility with the industry community. And we want to be able to get the universities, both for you know, the community colleges as well as the four-year institutions, to get very concentrated not only in increasing their research but also to increase the graduates that will feed this. Coming back to the comment that was made on Oregon Iron Works, I think if Chandra Brown were here, she'd tell you one of the shortages that she's suffering right now is finding enough qualified welders to be able to handle the work that Oregon Iron Works has. Now, that's a good problem. That's a problem that we'd like to see in more and more places. So that's just symptomatic of what can be done as we you know, increase the pedal on what we're trying to do here.
Thank you. Great perspective. Any other questions? So that completes the list of people
Thank you.
Who have signed up to testify. Is there anyone else who would like to testify? I see a number of people who have been part of our discussions up till now, but anyone else would like to be heard on this bill? No one. Well, don't say we didn't give you the chance. So with that, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 3507, House Bill 2727. Certainly my hope that those discussions will continue and that we'll be able to bring back some additional changes and have a successful passage of the bill. Thank you all for being here. And if there's anything else to come for the committee, I'd like to hear it now. There isn't. We're adjourned. Thank you.